Will raising the minimum wage hurt jobs or reduce poverty? A new report says both.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM in New York, I'm Mark Garrison with the Marketplace Midday Update. A new Congressional Budget Office report weighs in on the Obama administration plan to raise the minimum wage to $10.10. Marketplace's Quina Kim joins us to explain. Good morning, Quina.
Hi, Mark.
So the CBO, they are supposed to be kind of the neutral party in this, sticking to the numbers and the facts. And true to form, in this report, there are things for supporters and opponents of a minimum wage hike to like. What are the key points here?
Yeah, so the CBO says that raising the minimum wage will increase the pay for about 16.5 million workers and lift almost a million people out of poverty. Now, the conservatives point to the part where the CBO says if we raise the minimum wage, about 500,000 jobs will be lost. The National Restaurant Association, which has been opposing the hike, claims that most of the jobs are going to be entry-level jobs and for low-skilled workers. So the takeaway is that it'll adversely affect folks who are already living on the edge.
Okay, so where do we go from here in the debate after this report?
Yeah, that's hard to tell. There's been broad public support for raising the minimum wage, but there's also the fact that President Obama has been saying it won't affect job growth. Economists like Robert Pollan echo that line. He's with the University of Massachusetts.
The evidence from states and from cities such as San Francisco, Santa Fe, that have significantly higher minimum wages, do not show job losses resulting from raising the minimum wage.
At the same time, a spokesman for House Speaker John Boehner, pointing to the report, says we should be focusing on creating, not destroying jobs.
Okay, Marketplace's Quina Kim, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
President Obama is in Mexico today, meeting with his Mexican and Canadian counterparts. The North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA, is now 20 years old, but the conversation about trade continues. One topic that may come up today, making business travel easier. Marketplace's Dan Weissman looks at why that's important.
Traveling back and forth to Mexico to do business means spending time waiting to cross the border and go through customs. John Doggett is a business professor at the University of Texas.
The amount of time you can spend, especially on the Mexican border, it's not a couple hours. Sometimes it can be 3 or 4 hours because of traffic and because of security concerns.
And time is money. The U.S. already has trusted traveler programs that allow registered travelers to zip through customs on their way back into the United States. But that doesn't get you into Mexico any faster. What if a traveler who gets certified could take the fast lane across any border in either direction? Here's Arnold Maltz, who studies global trade at Arizona State University.
Anything that requires real hands-on work is going to get easier. And that could be anything from high-touch kinds of things like consulting to high-service kinds of things, startups.
One thing we don't know, whether farmhands crossing the border to work would be eligible. In Chicago, I'm Dan Weissman for Marketplace.
The reality show Shark Tank brings pitching startup businesses to prime time. Even if you're not an entrepreneur, mastering a good pitch is still pretty useful to your career. Jules Pieri is CEO of The Grommet, a product launch company, which means she hears a lot of business pitches. Good morning, Jules.
Good morning, Mark.
So you make regular visits to Harvard Business School. MBAs will give you pitches. You say about 90% of them make the same mistake, which is not getting to the point or burying the lead, as we would say in journalism. What advice do you give them as far as overcoming that problem?
Well, you really want to get to a simple analogy, if you can, for your business. We launched a company called Rent the Runway, and their pitch was, it's Netflix for evening dresses.
Yep.
There's nobody who can't understand that. So if you have that advantage of an analogy, use it right up front and repeat it many times.
Now, not all of us have pitched a startup business, but we've all done a job interview. And sometimes you go in and you have your pitch, your answers to the questions you expect, but you get halfway through and you just feel like you're not winning this person over. How do you know when to switch gears in your pitch? And what do you do when you figure out that you need to?
Well, the main goal is to make the other person feel smart and engaged and on your side. And the best way to do that is to get them talking. So I would reverse the interview and actually start asking questions.
And what else can people who may not start a business anytime soon but might want to get a new job and nail a really good interview soon, what else can they learn from the pitch process that you experience a lot that would help them in their careers?
You don't need a personality transplant, so don't feel like you have to be somebody else. But it's really important to be able to describe your transitions well. You always want to seem like you were heading towards something, not away from something.
Okay. Let's try and test this a little bit. Maybe this is something we can use as a business and finance show. So if you were trying to develop a pitch for Marketplace to someone that had never listened to it before, how would you pitch our program to somebody?
You're a busy person, and yet you need to stay current. And this will be your seven-minute dose to make sure you're always on the cutting edge.
That is quite good, and we did not tell you to prepare for this, so you did that on the spot. Impressive. Jules Pierri, founder and CEO of The Grommet, thanks very much.
Thank you, Mark.
And finally, a Florida man is apologizing for smashing a vase valued at $1 million in a Miami museum, a creation of Chinese artist Ai Weiwei. Police say the man who smashed the vase claimed to be protesting what he felt was the museum's lack of support for local artists. Ai, who himself once smashed an urn as an artistic statement, says the protester was wrong to break the art in Florida. Ai also says he doesn't really think his now broken vase was actually worth $1 million. In New York, I'm Mark Garrison. This is the Marketplace Midday Update. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.